This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Today we're going over White Lotus 5, The Lotus Eaters. So if you haven't seen it and don't want us to ruin it for you, you might want to pass on this one, and we'll catch you next time.
Hey, gentle listeners.
Are you ready
for one dry kiss? Welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy irreverent love letter to rom-com movies as well as limited TV series. Today we are going over White Lotus Episode 5, The Lotus Eaters. And I am here with... Are you ready for a bad rhyme?
No.
My artistical sisterical, Miss Tamara Cosio.
Oh my. Not as bad as I was thinking it was going to be honest. Not as bad as I thought it would be. And I am here with my friend who I'm not sure if she would eat a lotus, but she sure does eat a lot of delicious things, Corinne Eddy.
Thank you. Yeah. You know, it's so funny. Speaking of like rhymes or punny or whatever, I was editing last week's episode.
Mm-hmm.
And in the script, you said, "And Kitty practically purrs." And I had that line and I was like, "And Kitty practically purrs," or something like that, right? Like I did it, but I didn't realize her name is Kitty and you said purrs, and together it was a clever play on words. And I was like, "Oh my gosh, Corinne, come on now."
After all of these years, you think you would get me by now, Corinne. You think you would get me. Sometimes my humor just goes over your head.
It does. You know, it's too erudite for me. Speaking of erudite, you know how I'm not like the biggest Halloween fan?
You're not the biggest Halloween fan?
Yeah.
You are damaged in that way. Yes, I fault you greatly for that.
Well, I will tell you a Halloween that I can get behind. On Tuesday, I went on a Halloween-y adventure.
Did you?
Yes, with my friend Sylvia. Because I saw on Instagram, seductive Instagram, an advertisement for a pumpkin patch with dinosaurs. And I was like, I need to go to a pumpkin patch with dinosaurs. And so on Tuesday, me and Sylvia drove down and we went to the dinosaur pumpkin patch. And we went on a hayride. We went on a, quote, train ride. We went on, like, we did, like, a corn maze. All dinosaur themed. Giant dinosaurs. A huge Godzilla. Amazing.
See, you are embracing Halloween then. You're embracing Halloween. Or is it the dinosaurs that got you in?
It was the dinosaurs, of course.
Oh, well.
When do you get to see dinosaurs in the middle of a cornfield? I mean, come on.
Well, obviously, at least once in your life. That sounds amazing, though. And I am fully jealous. We're still, Larry and I are still trying to figure out what we're going to do for Halloween, because one of our brilliant ideas was to go up to visit you and go to Halloween at the Winchester Mystery House.
Yes.
But I was like, financially speaking, that's probably not a really good idea right now. And I'm being super frugal with my money just as mm-hmm. in case I need to make it stretch for a really long time.
Sure.
So now we're talking about going to the Queen Mary, which is the haunted ship down here in Long Beach for Halloween. But there's not going to be any dinosaurs there, I hate to inform you, sadly. You would think there would be.
There should be, because apparently dinosaurs and Halloween go hand in hand. Like, let me do you a little favor here.
Although I do have to say I'm excited about the Queen Mary, because we've gone to Universal Studios. We
yeah.
have gone to Not Scary Farm. We haven't gone to Disneyland, but I just went with you and my sister. So
yeah.
That wouldn't seem as special, because our Disneyland trip was truly special and would be hard to beat.
Okay. I just sent you three photos from...
All right. I don't know. Let's see. Godzilla's got pumpkins
on its spine. Yeah.
On his spine.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And then Corinne's making a surprised face in front of a T-Rex that looks like he's either guarding his pumpkin or on the hunt for something.
Mm-hmm.
And then she's giving a thumbs up to
an Ankylosaurus.
Uh-huh. One of those.
It's my favorite dinosaur.
That looks like a good time was had by all.
Yes, yes.
And I do agree. Dinosaurs and pumpkin patches should happen more often.
Exactly.
I didn't do anything that exciting. I went down to Temecula and had a lovely luncheon with some of my cousins and my niece.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
My cousin Nicole and my niece are both pregnant and about a month apart. And we couldn't be more excited because there's going to be two cousins that are going to grow up together and be super close in age, which hasn't happened much in this new upcoming generation. So we're excited.
Yeah.
Excited.
That's awesome.
And I made Squeesh a lovely baby board that took me 1,700 hours to make, but because I'm a perfectionist, and that is my way.
Well, you know, you used gold filigree on it, correct?
Yes, I did. And calligraphy and all sorts of fancy other things, you know, that are appropriate for a baby gift.
Mm-hmm. I hope you took a picture of it so I can see it, because
I didn't.
Oh, no.
Honestly, like, that's the first thing. You're like, I took pictures of me and dinosaurs in a pumpkin patch. I spent a bazillion hours on this gift. Did you take a picture of it? Absolutely not. I was going to ask Squeesh to send me a picture, though, because she said she was going to put it right above her nursing chair.
Aww.
She's like, this is perfect. It's going to go above my nursing chair. And her nursery is woodland creatures. And so I put like little woodland creatures in the design. And so I thought that was really cool that she could use it in her decor.
That's awesome. And Squeesh has like impeccable taste. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She's fashion guru in her, like, all her own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Was that the only thing that you had going on that you didn't share with me before the podcast? Because I was asking, Corinne, what have you been up to? I'm not telling you. I'm saving it for the audience.
And I'm sorry. Dinosaurs in a pumpkin patch isn't, like, dynamic enough for you?
No, I just want more now. I'm thirsty for more. Thirsty for more Corinne adventures, which we will soon have together because I'm going up there on the beginning of November, as we said before. And gentle listeners, what do you think we should do once we're together? Should we record a live episode? Mm-hmm. Should we have a pickle off where we sample all the pickles that I bought Corinne?
We are doing
that.
And
try to decipher the flavors. I know, but I'm just saying, are we going to record it or are we
just
going to do it?
Oh, yeah. We could totally record that. That would be fun. A little bonus ep. Mm-hmm. I like that.
Yep. Thoughts are flying hard and fast here.
Speaking of food, one of my sister's childhood friends came up and we had like lunch together and talked. And I had leftover lemon meringue pie for my birthday. And so I shared it with her.
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I don't know where that came from.
And it was delicious, I have to say.
Mm-hmm. Was there more to that story, or did you just want
to? No, I just wanted to share that, like, we had a super tasty pieces of lemon meringue pie together. Yeah.
Not going to lie, I did not like that as much as the dinosaur pumpkin patch story.
Well, when you come up, I can connect with my dad and we can see about getting you some pie.
They're going to be on to me. They're going to know every time that I come into town, I request and require a pie. I will drive the 45 minutes to see you as long as there is pie involved. I'm sure your parents love that.
You know, I think that they appreciate the fact that you're not there for them. You're there for the pie.
I mean, I'm there for them adjacent to the pie. That should be. I don't just only talk to the pie. I talk to them while I'm eating their pie.
You're like, because if I didn't, it would be awkward.
Yeah. I'd be like, I'm just going to eat this. Talk amongst yourselves.
You're just like, okay, I'm going to go out to the car now that I have my pie.
Oh, my God. How awkward would that be? Okay, Corinne, thanks for having Barbara. And it was nice seeing you guys. So great. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Joe, great, great. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, bye.
You like Hamburglar style the pie? Oh, this is for me? Thanks. Bye.
See, now you're talking it into existence. I got to do it now. Now I'm just going to sneak off. Da-dun, da-dun. Good thing your parents don't listen to this podcast.
Oh my gosh. My parents love you.
I love your parents. They're my surrogate parents. I am an unofficial Edding.
Well, that's why we all call you Bramara.
I know. Works on so many levels.
So, Bramara. Mm-hmm.
Good segue. Like that.
Yes. What the fuck happened in episode 4? I'm an inquiring mind and I'd love to know.
Well, now, here's episode 4, The Down Low on the Lotus. Tanya McQuad reveals to the Diva Twins that she found their bag of tricks, a.k.a. drugs, on the beach the prior day and turned it over to the hotel staff, which causes Paula and Olivia to confront Armand, the hotel manager, about the bag that he 100% hadn't turned up yet. Once Armand is caught lying, he's totally going to give the bag back, drugs and all, even though he fell off the wagon and had been helping himself to the many fun pharmaceutical things inside. Until he's confronted outside his office door by the very pissed guest, Shane.
Ugh.
Who's understandably upset because the night before, Armand knowingly put Shane and his newly wed wife on a small charter boat with Tanya McQuad while she was spreading her mother's ashes.
That was amazing.
Armand sold the experience as a romantic evening for the couple, knowing full well that Tanya was going to lose her shit. So now, Shane is losing his shit and demanding to speak to Armand's boss. Armand, full of piss and vinegar and probably some illegal substances, doctors up a fake business card to give the disgruntled guest and then decides to keep Olivia and Paula's drugs. Not in that order. Because he's going to have some rough days ahead. But who could really use drugs right now is Rachel Sutton, because she's unpleasantly surprised by a fun-filled visit from her mother-in-law, Kitty, who's there to check up on her baby boy, Shane, who still hasn't gotten his pineapple room.
Oh, no!
Kitty seems nice enough, but is really good at giving underhanded compliments towards Rachel, who's on the brink of losing it. And who else is losing it? It's Paula, who's pretty much awful up to hear from her friend Olivia, who's trying to steal her resort boyfriend Kai out from under her, and Olivia's parents, the Mossbachers, who are adamant that their son Quinn is the minority in the world, and any race would act just as privileged as white people if given the chance. But they're not racist. They're the good guys. Just so you know.
Oh my God.
Speaking of good guys, Armand is not being one. He propositions his guest, Mark Mossbacher, and his employee, Dylan. Dylan accepts under the assumption that he will get all kinds of employee perks from his boss. Dylan and Armand get wasted, naked, and busy in Armand's office, and that's where disgruntled Shane finds him when he went to complain that he got a bogus business card. He opened the office door to spy Dylan bent over Armand's desk while Armand was straight eating his ass. Oh, yeah. Tanya McQuad also met a guy named Greg, who works for BLM, not Black Lives Matter, but the Bureau of Land Management. And the two go on a date and screw around, causing Tanya to keep stringing along poor Belinda, who's supposed to ultimately go into business with her. The end.
That's what happened. Man, you packed it all in there. I'm impressed.
It was a lot. There was some things that I left out, but I'm like, that's pretty much the brunt of it.
Those are like the big pieces, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was little pieces that filtered through the big pieces.
Yes.
But if they're worth talking about, they'll come up in this episode, episode 5, which, Corinne, would you like to get us started on?
Well, yes, I certainly would. And, you know, nothing to get an episode started off like, as I titled the first section, regrets.
Regrets.
And I would say this entire episode, it could be called The Lotus Eaters, or it could be just called Regrets, because I think that that would be very apt for just about every situation in this episode.
Yep. Fitting. Very, very fitting.
Oh, the regrets of it all. We see Armand and Dylan getting themselves together after being walked in on, doing the funky monkey loving, as Tamara just stated. Armand mumbling to himself about swearing he locked the door, and Dylan stating, "Okay, I'll see you on Wednesday." Armand turns his head and glares at Dylan. "You're on second shift tomorrow." Dylan balks. "You said I could pick whatever shift I wanted." Armand quickly backtracks. "I didn't remember anything I said. You're going to need to come in." Dylan, pissed and hopefully talking to a lawyer soon, leaves the room saying, "You owe me."
This honestly made me wonder the ramification of Dylan's actions. Because should he get a lawyer? Yes. But was he wronged? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But would he get fired? Like, if this was the real world, would he get fired because of the illicit activity that he partook in? even though it was his manager and even though he was, you know, propositioned in an inappropriate way.
And pressured into it. Would he still keep his job? After, like, being pressured on multiple occasions. He may not keep his job, but he certainly would get a payout. So,
yeah. Uh-huh. That's why I'd be like, I think I would just leave if I was Dylan. If Dylan's like, you want me on tomorrow's late shift? Fuck you, I'm out. Like,
yeah.
But then again, he might not have as good of a lawsuit if he leaves. I don't know. I don't know. That just got my mind clicking in all kinds of weird ways that I did not expect. I'm like, what about Dylan? What about Dylan?
Yeah, I'm like, would he have done the drugs and had his ass munched by his boss if his boss had not really talked him into it and pressured him into it? No.
Yeah.
He was not offering his boss man drugs. He was not bending over and saying, hey, look at what a pretty ass I have. Come on and eat me.
I agree. And this isn't the first time in this episode that you wonder what the outcome would have been had there not been one persistent person trying to talk somebody into something that they weren't exactly comfortable with.
Mm-hmm. Although I do kind of blame Dylan, you know, because he was sort of asking for it. He did have the pants that said on the back pockets, eat on one pocket, me on the other pocket, with an arrow in between down the ass crack portion pointing.
Prin, you know that is completely slut-shaming. You cannot blame what he was wearing on his actions. He should be able to wear eat-me-ass pants as much as he wants without worry that anybody's going to actually eat his ass.
Even if he's wearing a slutty crop top instead of, like, his polo shirt?
Especially if he's wearing a slutty crop top.
I appreciate your point of view, and I'm sorry, gentle listeners, for slut-shaming Shane. Not Shane. I would totally slut-shame Shane. Shane. He's an asshole. Dylan.
You can't even remember his name. How dare you?
It's because I was distracted by his juicy ass. I'm sorry. I'm just part of the problem. Gentle listeners, I agree with everything that Tam was saying. And let's double down, though, on those regrets as we see Tanya in bed post her, it looks like, not very satisfying bitty banging. And Greg, who, as soon as he got his rocks off, springs from the bed and gets dressed to dash out the door. Oh, how sexy. Tanya tries pressing him to find out when he's leaving and when I'll see you next. But, oh no, Greg has come down with a nasty cough from all that cigar smoking and simply can't answer her. He needs to leave her room immediately so he can get some water.
His coughs were much more believable than Corinne's letting on, honestly.
His excuse was just as believable as mine, though. Like, I'm sorry, does Tanya not have water in her room?
Like, I think she does, but...
Yes, he can easily get some water in the room in which she is in, but no. I got a cough. Yes. So... then there's Kai and Paula. They sneak off to an empty room late at night for some quality time. Post the bingity bang boom, Kai tells Paula that Olivia hit on him, and Paula now knows that Olivia knows. She's pissed, but very low-key about it. Then Kai gives Paula a beautiful shell necklace that he made for her out of the...
Is that a sunny? Is that the sunny that he was talking about?
Yes! And asks her to stay with him in Hawaii. She lets him know that even though she really likes him, she has a life to get back to on the mainland. However, she may be able to help him out. Winky, winky. Kai is confused. And Corinne is intrigued. That's me. I'm Corinne. He asks, how can you help? Paula says, well, it's not what I can give you, but what I can get for you. What? What can she get for him?
Next is a section called Nicole has a problem with Mark sharing about his affair. Shocking. Imagine that.
Tam's better at picking up on sarcasm than I am, apparently, from the last episode where I was like, you said it this way. And you're like, because I was being sarcastic. And I was like, oh.
Just put the emphasis on the right syllable and it'll make sense to you. And then we cut to Nicole putting her $75,000 bracelets into the hotel room safe. And now I'm wondering if Paula has decided to liberate the bracelets. But gentle listeners, push those thoughts aside because we're about to get into a shitty conversation with Nicole and Mark. Yay! Nicole, who's very concerned about appearances, is pissed. Why did you tell the kids how much my bracelets cost? It makes us look materialistic. Mark says flatly, I didn't. I just told Quinn. Nicole counters, but he doesn't have any frame of reference for you getting them for me. Mark, who apparently has no shits to give at this time, continues his diva twin behavior and responds with little effect. Oh, I told Quinn, I've had enough lies from Dad, and I didn't want to lie to him. Nicole's eyes flare at this. I'm sorry? What exactly did you say to him? Because I'd really like to know. Mark soullessly responds, well, I told him that I had an affair and I regret it, and it was one of the worst periods of time in my life. If Nicole were a cartoon character, she'd have steam coming out of her ears and her entire body would be rattling and starting to levitate off the ground.
Yeah.
But she's not. So she gives a strained reply. Do you see how that's selfish, Mark? Selfish to me? Mark's confused.
Mark's like, you weren't the one that cheated, so why should it be a problem?
I cheated on you. Why can't I tell my son about it? Like, no biggie. It was my side of the story. Isn't that the important side?
Yeah, nothing happened to you. You weren't the one who did the thing.
And you got bracelets out of it, so shush. No. Nicole has to explain to him. Now, I'm going to have a conversation with Quinn about what happened and how I felt, and then have a similar conversation with Olivia. And I don't want to talk about it with them or at all. I'm on vacation, and I want to unwind from the stress of everything. Mark brushes her off. Well, I don't think Quinn wants to talk about it. He didn't really have any follow-up questions. Shocking. Again.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you for acknowledging my feelings, Mark. You're a real gem.
And what the hell would Quinn ask? So, Dad, when you were screwing somebody else, did you use protection?
How many times? And was it, like, hot, you know?
Or was it, like, eating a bowl of worms, but better worms because it wasn't Mom? Nicole has gotten to the point in every emotional argument where, in spite of what I'd like to do, I start crying. Same. With tears of frustration. Same. Both Corinne and I are emotional criers.
Yes.
Angry. Cry. Anger upset, criers. Cry. Sad. Yeah. Mostly anger criers, which does not help when you're trying to win an argument and you're bawling all over yourself.
Yes.
Obviously, Nicole can sympathize with us.
Oh.
Anyways, I'm guessing Nicole isn't wild about crying while she's upset either, but here she is with her voice quavering. Nobody wants to talk about your affair, Mark, which is why we agreed not to talk about it, because I'm still in a lot of pain and it still hurts me a lot. And I want it to be over and I want it to be behind us, and you keep bringing it up again. Here, why? Mark responds quietly. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I can feel your really deep
empathy
right now.
Gosh, these two. I'm like, you're still married. Why? Oh.
Yeah, I started off the series being like, okay, Mark's okay. Mm-hmm. And Nicole, not real wild about her, but like, whatever. And like,
She's a little neurotic.
Yeah.
Just a smidge.
At this point in the series, I'm like, okay, I feel kind of sympathetic towards Nicole. Not always, but sometimes, you know, people aren't perfect.
Yeah.
And Mark, you know, just fuck right off, Mark.
I know. The tables have turned.
Yes, they have.
That is the magic of the White Lotus Resort. You feel one way, and then, oh, wait, no, maybe my feelings have switched. Not with everybody, of course.
No.
But with some people.
So far, my feelings for Shane have remained the same.
Undeterred. Consistently annoyed.
Yes. 100% unsympathetic.
Yeah. A whole jar of irritated.
Yes. A whole bowl of fuck right off. I'd rather eat worms. Thank you.
With the side of you're an asshole.
Yes. And you don't deserve the plunge pool. Tam and I are taking it over. Thank you.
Exactly. Bogarting the plunge pool.
Plus, I think that Rachel, even though I have problems with Rachel now too, like, she'd have a better time with us than she would with Shane.
Anybody would.
Except for Kitty.
Oh, God, yeah. Kitty would be like, my baby. Oh, Kitty.
Exactly.
Kitty.
Which goes to the next section I have titled, Shane and Kitty Sitting in a Tree.
Mm.
L-O-V-I-N-G, mommy. Yes.
Ill, 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 ill.
At breakfast, Rachel, Shane, and Shane's mom, Kitty, meow, are having idle conversation when Armand comes over and announces cheerily, I have great news. The guests of the pineapple room have checked out this morning, and I'm making it my top priority to get the room prepared for you, so you should be in the room in this afternoon. Shane, however, doesn't care. Instead, he mentions the card Armand gave him with the wrong number on it, and he was going to tell him last night, but when he went to Armand's office, Armand was very busy, winky winky. Mm. So I'm wondering, me, Corinne, I'm wondering what the fuck does Shane want now that he's got the pineapple room? What's his angle? Because he's holding it over Armand's head.
That's his angle. He's trying to torment the man because he feels like he was wrong. So he's throwing him out and letting him dangle in the wind. And he's like, am I going to tell on you or am I not going to tell on you? Because I saw you do something. Am I going to say what it is? No, I'm not going to say what it is. But you might think I'm gonna, type of thing.
The look of sheer satisfaction and joy, and I would say greed, that flashed across his face when he saw Armand munching the ass of Dylan.
Mm-hmm.
I was just like, you are such a flaming asshole.
Oh, yeah.
Seriously? Oh, my gosh.
Oh, he is so like the kitty cat that's toying and pawing at the little mouse before he devours it. Mm. That's what he's doing right now to Armand.
Oh, fuck right off, Shane. But my musings are interrupted by Kitty, who announces, I'm so glad they're finally getting the room with the plunge pool and the private patio. I planned the wedding and the honeymoon. Really, Kitty? You haven't mentioned that enough times.
I'm surprised she didn't add, and I don't remember a thing. I don't remember anything, do you? It's a blur.
And you were just the most beautiful bride. I mean, you were very white, but you were very beautiful.
Yeah. Pale, but gorgeous.
Yes. Mm. And then Kitty continues, because Kitty can't help but say horrible things. And I never stay at this hotel when I'm in Hawaii, but... And she trails off and then remembers. Oh, yeah. I read an article in Condé Nast that this was the most romantic hotel in Hawaii. And I wanted to have the best for my... Oh, great. For my previous son. Apparently, I got spell-checked into previous instead of precious.
Oh.
And I wanted the best for my precious son. And with that, Armand says, well... Enjoy your breakfast and leaves. Good, Armand. Excellent strategy. I'm right there with you. Once he's gone, Kitty turns to Shane and Rachel and asks, do you find this to be the most romantic hotel in Hawaii? I mean, it's fine, but not super romantic. And I know that Rachel wants to answer. The most romantic hotel in Hawaii is the hotel where you're not there. But she doesn't. Instead, Rachel says, it's nice. And Shane says, it's okay. Because, hello, he didn't get his fucking pineapple room plunge pole.
How can you argue that it's not the most romantic hotel in Hawaii? You can get your ass munched by the manager. You can totally, like, get boinked by a barback in a cabana. Mm. You can wank off to the sunset on the beach. There's just all kinds of romantic things happening at the White Lotus.
So much romantical stuff.
Mm-hmm.
A guest using an employee as a boy toy, and a manager exploiting his employee. And okay, I gotta say, wanking off to the sunset, great. I'm go for that. Yeah, that's the most consensual thing happening in this hotel right now.
Okay. If that's not selling you, then how about get this? The White Lotus, the only place where you can have a romantic sunset boat charter dinner and a funeral at the same time.
Ooh.
Do you want your loved one's funeral to be a little sexier? Do you think they want to go out with a bang in more ways than one?
Well, do we have a cruise for you? Not only can you wipe the tears of a grieving grown daughter for her abusive mother, but you can be regaled with tales of her abusive childhood while you sit at a candlelit meal.
Mm-hmm. Romantic ambiance, good food, and wails of grief.
And part of the ambiance is like this, the slight haze of ashes just kind of wafting in the breeze.
Make sure none get in your champagne flutes, but there you go.
Don't you feel closer to everyone now that you've had a little bit of ash in your meal?
Yes. If you can't be with your loved ones, drink them. And surprisingly, the Suttons' breakfast isn't as unhinged as the Mosbachers' breakfast. Initially, it's just Olivia and Paula, the diva twins, sitting at the table, but they are sitting across from each other instead of next to each other, showing the rift that is growing between them. Mm. Olivia, who is going for an interesting bedhead look this morning, totally casually, not casually, calls out Paula asking, "So, who's the guy? The one you've been sneaking out every night to have sex with?" Paula looks up slowly from her cereal, glaring at Olivia and saying stonily, "I think you know who he is." But their conversation is interrupted by Nicole and Mark joining them, and very shortly thereafter, a very happy and soaking wet Quinn. He effuses, "I was on the canoe with the local guys. They're training for paddling from the Big Island to Kauai." Nicole and Mark give him a hard time, as they didn't know where he was. Mark accuses, "Why didn't you let us know where you were?" And Quinn reminds him flatly, "I don't have a phone." Which shuts down any further scolding. Nicole, in order to change the subject, asks, "Paula, are you feeling better? I assume that's why you left during dinner." And Olivia glares at her mom, saying, "She felt fine. She was disturbed by the entertainment. It bothers her to have to watch Hawaiians dance for a bunch of white people." Mm. Nicole says, "Oh, well, I think they enjoy sharing their cultural heritage." And Mark, well, Mark, he's just letting his opinions all hang out loose. And he essentially says, "Yeah, taking over people's land is bad and all, but privileged people are going to privilege. It's just the way of the world. Nobody wants to give up their power." He looks over at Olivia. "Do you want to give up your money?" Olivia stares at him blankly, and Mark continues, "Exactly. Maybe we should feel shitty about ourselves for crimes of the past, wear a hair shirt, and not go on vacation." And just for a frame of reference, outside of Mark, the Hawaiian nation was overthrown by some crappy businessmen in 1898. It became an annexed territory in 1900 and officially became a state in 1959, only 65 years ago, a time when our country should have known better, and yet we perpetrated anyways. Good times. Thank you for that bit of history, Corinne. Banner writing.
You're welcome. And I know it's much more complicated than that, but yeah.
If you had to put it in a nutshell, that's a good nutshell to put it in.
And also in a nutshell, fuck right off, Mark. Do you want to spend some quality time with Shane? Because maybe we can have a plunge pool meeting for the both of you. You can talk about how hard it is to be a rich white guy.
I know that you don't understand, Corinne. You can't possibly understand because you've never been a rich white guy, but they have struggles.
We all have struggles. It is true. And also, fuck right off. This is like Mark's argument is the whole reason why there are people who are like, "We want to talk about how Columbus discovered America and how slaves were like super happy with where they were because we don't want to make white people feel bad when they're learning our country's history."
That's the one thing that when people even try to portray that slaves liked being slaves, I'm like, "Oh, well, by all means, let's put you in forced captivity for 6 to 7 months doing hard labor where you're not given anything, basically, but the bare necessities just to keep you alive and working and see how you like it."
And they didn't have a choice about like where they were or where they went or like how they were treated or anything like that. Ooh, let's not have freedom. That sounds like a lot of fun.
And even if they had good periods of their life where they had a sympathetic master who treated them well, like there was always the fucking what if, like, oh my gosh, this person might die. I might be bequeathed to their kids. Their kids might treat me like shit. Realize that they don't want 7 slaves. They only need 3. So sell off my husband and children. That could happen at any time. But, you know, we're all happy here.
We're so happy. No need to feel guilty. We're so happy. Yeah. I'm like, let's just talk about what happened in the past. We can learn from it and we can do better. Thank you.
And we don't have to minimize it.
No.
Why are we trying to minimize the experience that some people had?
Yeah.
Like, just because some people had worse histories or tougher histories than you does not minimize what you went through. It's just like we all have our shared, or we all have our individual experiences. We all have our shared experiences, and we should at least be able to acknowledge that experiences, my experience is going to look like yours and yours isn't going to look like mine. And that's fine.
Well, Tam, as a sensitive white person, I just want to let you know that, you know, that story you were telling me earlier, it made me feel bad about myself. So I just want you to kind of just rewrite that and just for me.
I just have one thing to say, Corinne.
Yes.
Tough titties.
Wait, how is that even okay? I need you to make me feel better about things that happened. No. No, we don't.
No, you don't.
Age appropriate? Yes. Lying about the past? No. Speaking of weirdness, and just like we were, me being weird, we're entering into Belinda and Tanya Weirdness Part 1. Are you ready?
No.
Belinda, the most likable person in the entire series. Are you ready for this? That afternoon, Belinda and Tanya are meeting, and Tanya explains about how she's afraid of revealing layer after layer of her onion self to Greg because he might reject her after each layer is revealed. She says, "That's why I just want to show him the core of who I am, my messy alcoholic self, and let the chips fall where they may." Belinda poo-poos the idea that Tanya is a messy alcoholic, but also confirms, "You know, I think you should listen to your instincts. I think there are so many women who are just like you, and that's what my center can help with." Belinda nervously hands over her business plan to Tanya, saying, "There are a lot of ideas in there. Maybe too many, but dream big, right? If it's too much, we can just always pull back." Tanya, who is thinking about Greg, vacantly nods, and Belinda gets up. "Well, I have to go to work at the spa, but maybe we can talk about things when we meet for dinner tonight." Tanya says without conviction, "Sure, I'll look at the business plan." And Belinda leaves. But I'm betting you, Tam, $5 that Tanya does not read the business plan before dinner.
Yeah, that sucks, because when Tanya first met Belinda, she was completely enamored and all, yeah, like, "Oh my God, you need to be in your own business. You're so talented," and yada, yada. And slowly but surely, like, she's kind of lost interest in Belinda and refocused it on this Greg person.
So I know. Now, I thought she was going to wear Belinda as a skin suit. And I'm glad that that's not happening. But I also feel bad for Belinda because she had this focus on her and these very specific intentions,
mm-hmm,
given to her over and over and over again, saying, "Yes, I'm legit. I'm the one. I'm going to do this." And now
she's an emotional support string along.
Yes. Ooh, that's a good term. Emotional support string along. I like it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't like the implications of it, but it's a very accurate term.
Yes.
Meanwhile, Paula gets Olivia to put her locket in the hotel safe and overhears the combination for it. Check one on her steal the bracelet scheme.
Whew. The next section is called Tanya and Greg Awkwardness. But first, Rachel and Shane get into the pineapple room. Finally. Is it everything that they thought it would be? Well, mother-in-law Kitty doesn't think so. Shane, however, is quite pleased because Armand has given them the room for free to make up for the inconvenience and possibly to gloss over the fact that he saw him in his office eating his employee's ass.
Yes.
Just
that.
Just going to put that there.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's that little tidbit. A little small detail.
It's a teensy-weensy one.
While this is going on, Tanya gets dressed in her most casual, super sparkly dress and goes over to Greg's room. She overhears him having a heated conversation. She was going to knock on the door, but since he seemed so busy, she just decided to listen at it, only to have Greg open the door. Tanya apologizes for eavesdropping and lets him know that she's just going to lay on her bed and wait for him to text her.
Oh.
He assures her he's going to text her, but first he's going to go get a swim in. He's not very assuring or flirty, though, so yeah.
Yeah.
He goes out to the pool and swims some laps. Then Tanya, very stealthily, walks out by the pool in her most casual, super sparkly dress. And she kind of hides behind a cabana curtain. But I say kind of because she's only halfway behind it. And Greg looks up from his lap swimming and gets blinded by the sun reflecting off her dress. Just kidding.
And he drowns. He drowns.
He notices Tanya and waves at her. And she sheepishly waves back, knowing the gig is up.
Oh.
Oh, she wanted him to see her. She wanted it.
She was asking for it in that super sparkly dress.
Yes. This whole time, too, Jennifer Coolidge, when she's playing Tanya, her lips are quivering the whole time when she's trying to be sneaky, which was just wee, 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 wee. So it looked like she was going wee, 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 the whole time, but you couldn't hear her do that noise. It was just her lips were making that like shape over and over again, which was a little distracting to me. Maybe because I've seen this like 4 or 5 times. I don't know.
I was just like, oh, girly, what are you doing? Oh, no. Oh, yeah. Greg is not giving off vibes. Like,
nope.
No. I'm surprised that he waved to Tanya from the pool, honestly.
Yeah. I was like, okay, slam bam, thank you, ma'am. We had like a nice little sexual tryst. Like, let's just leave it at that. But no, Tanya's hooked.
Yeah. And I feel like his sexual tryst was very akin to the one that Shane had with Rachel, where he was just like, boom, 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 boom. Oh, that was so great, wasn't it?
What gives you that idea? He seems like, oh, never mind. I can't even fake through that. I can't even fake through speculation about him. Yeah, you're right.
Because Tanya had no post-coital glow. If you're getting it good afterwards, you're like, And she was like,
I don't know. I think that might be pharmaceutically induced. Like, she always has that kind of flat expression on her face. When she's happy, when she's sad, when she's sneaky, that's all. She just has a flat expression and her quivering lips.
Botox, friend to all. Adjacent to Tanya on a cabana on the beach are Rachel and Kitty. Shane would be with them too, but he left them to swim in the ocean. And when Rachel said she'd go with him, he, motherfucker, told her, motherfucker, to stay, motherfucker, because he wanted to get some exercise. I'm going to swim real far, babe. I'm sorry. You should stay here with mom.
So let's dissect this a little bit. Do you think that he, A, really did think that Rachel couldn't go and keep up with him? B, wanted to go flirt with some unassuming women on the beach? Or C, was kind of sick of his mom and wanted a break from her and was just like, here, you keep her entertained while I go get a couple of minutes of somebody not yammering in my ear about how bad the room was, how much she did the honeymoon and wedding, and how she can't remember any of it?
I don't know. He really seems to eat up what she says. But I think he wanted to, like, be on his own and do his own thing. And, you know, he wouldn't want to be weighed down by the little miss. So column A and column B, but not column C. What about you? Yeah. What do you think?
I don't know. I honestly thought that he was going to, like, it didn't show it, but I'm like, oh, he just wants to go, like, sup, like, walk down the beach, kind of like that.
Yeah.
Because he did that. He was overtly flirting with the Diva twins.
Oh, by the way, gentle listeners, welcome to episode 5 of The Resort of Lies.
You left off at ew.
Okay, yeah, ew.
Was your next time.
Thank you. I just see the cursor flashing at me right by ew. Thank you, Tam. I appreciate that. As soon as Shane leaves, Kitty takes the opportunity to drill into Rachel with her continual backhanded compliments. Yay! That Shane is so lucky to have her because she's so pretty. Rachel is also attractive and so good looking and just beautiful, amongst other compliments. Finally, Rachel calls Kitty out. You're making it sound like I'm a trophy wife. Kitty explains, well, there's nothing wrong with that. We all have our strong points, and trophies are made out of gold, and gold is quite valuable.
Fuck right off, Kitty.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm surprised, and I hate to say this, that Kitty doesn't have more cosmetic surgery done on her the way she talks about trophy wives and whatnot.
Yeah, well, I'm pretty sure she killed her husband because she's a single Pringle, and I think that she's just living off of her money and her ex's monies. Kitty continues, "There were a lot of different women who tried to catch Shane's eyes, but you're the one who got him, so you have nothing to worry about. You won! Yay!"
Oh, if it were that easy. For the next 15 to 20 years until he gets sick of you and then moves on to a younger, fresher model.
Ugh. I think her prenup will be pretty nice by that point, but if somebody said, "Hey, you can spend a week with Shane, or you can eat this bowl of worms," I'd be like, "Hello, worms. You're looking mighty tasty there. Can I put ketchup on them?" Question.
"Hello, wormies, my old friend.
I've come to munch on you again. Rachel is shockingly not thrilled by this. Huh. Go figure. And later tries calling her mom when she's away from Kitty. Once Shane finally dicks around and comes back, she's like, "Look, Kitty and Shane, a shiny object. Go, go." She tries calling her mom in a moment alone, and she confesses that she made a mistake by marrying Shane. But her mom is in the middle of grocery shopping and is like, "Oh, honey, I can't really hear you. Can I talk with you later?" And Rachel's like, "I'm asleep." Okay, yes. Mom, love you.
Ugh, that part, for some reason, like, I seriously think I'm premenopausal because things hit me weird and I do not expect them. But seeing Rachel call her mom and just having that home base of, you know, wanting comfort and wanting somebody just to hash out things with, and her mom being there for her, I was like, God, I wish I had that.
Yeah.
Jesus. I wish I had a soft place to fall sometimes that was my mom.
Yeah.
But no, that wasn't the case.
No. She was never really a soft place to land.
No.
No. "Stop making me feel bad, Tam. Jeez."
Let me change the narrative. My mom was great. She's always there for me. I could call her anytime, which is true, but I just have to talk to her for 45 minutes while she was drunk and rattling on about some nonsense that... Never mind. Probably make you feel bad again. A little before 3 p.m., Paula finds Kai and lets him know that the entire family is going to be going on a boat. She gives him the combination to the safe and tells him, "Now's the time to do it. Just one of those bracelets? It's worth $75,000. You could get a really good lawyer with that money." Kai is very reluctant. "I don't know. Stealing isn't really my thing." And Paula pushes, "They stole from you first. They deserve it." Kai rebuts, "Your friend's family didn't steal my family's land." Paula disagrees. "They all stand for the same thing, so yeah, they did." Paula leaves to meet Olivia's family on the boat. Mark and Quinn are going for their first scuba, and Mark arranged for the rest of the fam to join them on the boat. So this is the second time where I'm like, if Paula was not there to instigate the theft, would Kai have ever done anything even remotely close to this?
No.
Survey says.
Ding, ding, ding.
No.
No. No. As like, Dylan? No. Kai? No.
Yeah.
Mm.
But that's what happens when you get with the Lotus Eater.
Mm-hmm.
Once the entire Mossbacher family is gathered on the boat, Mark says softly to Nicole, "I just want to say this one last thing. I think I told Quinn because no one respects me, and I thought maybe if I'm just honest about everything, I'll finally get somebody's respect because nobody respects me." Mm. Nicole is pissed. "Even when you're apologizing, it's an insult. I just can't with this anymore." Mark is confused. "What are you talking about?" And Nicole has had enough and announces to the boat, "I don't know why everybody thinks I'm their punching bag when all I'm trying to do is keep this family together. I am so tired of being poked. I'm going back to the room." And she storms off towards the golf cart that will take her back to the resort
Get up.
And cries. Mark looks around the boat in a panic and decides, I'm sorry, I gotta go after your mom. He climbs off the boat and says to the captain, if I'm not back in a few minutes, just take them all out on the dive. Quinn is understandably pissed because the only reason he did the scuba thing is because of his dad, and now he's bailing. Quinn calls after Mark, wait, Dad, you're leaving? But Mark is already hoofing it after Nicole in an effort to save his relationship.
Can we talk a moment about Mark?
Sure.
He is like, I told Quinn because I just wanted some respect. I wanted somebody to respect me. Oh, so you're saying Nicole doesn't respect you. Great. This is awesome. Are we having this conversation right now where you're trying to, quote, apologize, but really you're bringing up complaints about your relationship with her? Like, what the fuck? What the fuck?
Do you know why she doesn't respect you? Because you cheated on her.
Yeah, and then you're acting like an ass. So, you know,
yeah. Then you emotionally and physically check out of your family's life on vacation when you find out a bit of information about your dad that doesn't agree with you.
Yeah.
And that kind of gave us some insight into how you manage stressful situations, which is you're just going to shut down and let her carry everything by herself.
He's a baby man. He's a baby man. Yes. He gets the theme song.
Oof. Very fitting.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Kai, taking Paula's advice, has entered the currently empty room of the Mossbachers. And as he's opening the safe, Nicole is pulling up to the hotel in the golf cart. He has put the bracelets into a bag and is starting to leave the bedroom when Nicole arrives in the room, sobbing. Are there tears with those sobs? I don't know, but she stops crying momentarily to fold some clothes and put them away in Olivia's suitcase. And then continues crying. Meanwhile, Kai is in the primary bedroom trying to figure out what to do. Finally, he makes a decision. Is it a good decision? What might be some of the ways that Kai could handle this situation, Tam?
What would be a better way than how he handled it? It's just a shit situation. Maybe come in there and be like, housekeeping! Oh, I'm sorry. They said you were going to be gone. I just came in here to clean with my imaginary wash rag. And just do wax on, wax off all the way out the door. Pretend like you're cleaning imaginary things with an imaginary washcloth and hope she doesn't notice.
Yeah, I mean, I would put that shit back into the safe real quick, like, since she is hanging out in the other room crying, and then do that whole action.
You would probably hear the beep, 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 beep from the next room.
Okay. Second option, I would see if there were objects that I could hide around so that I just would not, because this person is obviously not super paying attention. So I could try and sneak out of the room. Or third option, I would be hiding under the bed or somewhere like that and just biding my time.
It always happens whenever somebody hides under a bed, no matter what the situation, somebody has sex on top of it. You have to be prepared for that circumstance.
I will take it. I would just be like, you go, girl, you get it. And when I hear the snores, I'll be out. Yeah.
It's kind of surprising that that hotel room doesn't have an alternate exit. Should there have been another exit to the hallway, or at least a window to the patio so he can maybe have hung out on the patio for a little while to possibly hide out, like you said?
Oh, absolutely. Also, Paula, what the fuck? Why didn't you just shoot him a text?
Yes, I thought the same thing. I'm like, hey, Kai, plan's off.
Yeah.
Nicole's going back to the room. She's super pissed. I know Quinn doesn't have a phone, but honey, I think you do.
Uh-huh.
So, and there was not even an attempt. Nowhere in the movie was she furiously texting going, why aren't you answering? Why aren't you answering? She did not even try.
And she could have just sent a text being like, OMGs, stuck on the boat with the Mossbachers, except the mom has stormed off and is going back to the room. Can you even believe it? If she wanted to, play, I don't know what's going on, you know?
Yeah. Winky, winky.
Yeah, seriously. You know, winky winkies can come in handy sometimes.
And they're super ambiguous. You can't tie anything to the winky winky.
No.
What do you mean, winky winky? Mom's going back to the room. Is this tied to the robbery? No. I was just saying, hey there, sexy, when I finished that text. See? It goes both ways.
Everybody knows
universal
that winky winkies do not hold up in the court of law. Okay.
They do not hold up in the court of law. There's the pickle rule and yes, there's the winky winkies do not hold up in a court of law. Yes. Those are the two rules we will stand by.
Absolutely. So we will find out what Kai decides to do after the break and after my heart breaks for this whole situation.
Just sucks so bad.
And we're back. It does suck so bad. When we left off, Kai had the bracelets in hand and had just made a decision of what to do since Nicole Mosbacher arrived back at the hotel room unexpectedly. He puts a camo buff around his face, and a buff is like a thing that's almost like a sleeve that goes from your neck over your nose and mouth area. And yeah, it's just like a turtleneck that goes up, but it's just the turtleneck part, the neck part. A baseball cap over his head and grabs Nicole as soon as she sees him. She screams, he wrestles her to the ground, and he orders, I'm not gonna hurt you, just be quiet and stay there until you've counted to 1,000. Okay, why he was not doing it, I'm not gonna hurt you, or I'm not gonna hurt you, like why he wouldn't have tried to disguise his voice a little, I don't know, but like whatever. And this would have worked as Nicole was being compliant, except further complicating matters, Mark walks through the door and sees what's happening. So in an effort to rescue his wife, he tackles Kai, who turns the tables on Mark, beats him up a bit, leaving him on the floor, and then Kai runs out of the room, taking off the camo buff, covering his face and his baseball cap. So now he's like a totally different person. Ta-da! He's now blending in. And very conspicuously walks through the Resort of Lies, holding the bag with the jewels in it, with the bracelet, and he ends up walking down to the beach, and who knows where from there.
One thing I was hissing at him throughout this whole thing is, do not leave. Do not leave, because if somebody gets robbed in the hotel and then all of a sudden an employee
is gone. Yeah.
Gone? Oh, who did it? Well, Kai, he was supposed to be here until 7 and just disappeared at 2 without telling anybody. Let's maybe might have been him. Like, it would have been so hard to, like, maintain your composure and stay at work. Like, he probably would have had to put the bracelets down his drawers in case he got strip searched. Or in case his locker got searched. Not him strip searched, but, like, that would have been the smart.
That's only if he gets too close to Armand. And I think he's smart enough to avoid him, but not smart enough to obviously have not done the dirty deed.
Goodness. But he shouldn't have left work. He should die. That is incriminating all its own.
100%.
Anywho, Nicole and Mark call the police, and on the dive boat, Paula looks guiltily at the necklace that Kai gave her, while Quinn looks longingly at the men and the outrigger paddling on the ocean against the skyline. How does Quinn's dive go? We don't know. All we do know is that Quinn, Olivia, and Paula come back to the hotel room to find police swarming all over it, dusting for prints and questioning their parents. That evening at dinner, Rachel, Shane, and Kitty are all dining together while Shane and Kitty gossip and tear down their quote-unquote friends, while Rachel sits there silently, looking like she wants to die.
Yes.
Belinda and Tanya have a super awkward conversation because Tanya is completely checked out and all she has running through her head is Greg, 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 Greg. And I'm pretty sure every time Belinda, who's trying to thoughtfully bring up the healthcare center, Tanya promised to help her open, talks. Instead of Tanya hearing Belinda say, and I'd really like it to be a community that can help women of all incomes, not just the rich ones, not that there's anything the matter with rich women, Tanya instead hears, Greg is not here. Greg doesn't like me. Greg never texted me like he said he would. Wonder what Greg is doing. Greg, 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 Greg. Blessedly, Tanya finally gets that text from Greg, asking her to meet him at the bar, and Tanya swiftly apologizes to Belinda. She's got to go ride that dick express. Choo-choo. She doesn't say that, but...
Yes.
She instead tells Belinda she's got to go, but charge everything to the room, and then runs off to Greg, 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 Greg.
Oh, man. No. Ugh. And then there's the Mosbachers, who are being personally seated by Armand, who assures them that their entire stay and everything to do with it has been comped. Mark responds by asking for tequila, Don Julio 1942, which is about $150 a bottle, just in case you were wondering. Nicole agrees, tequila.
That's so funny that you said that, because I was like, I didn't catch that when you were like, everything's comped. Tequila, $150 bottle of tequila, please, since it's comped.
Yeah, seriously. Armand tries talking to them some more, but all they say to him is tequila, because they're just like, we just want a drink. We had something shitty happen, and I fully support that. After Armand leaves, Mark touches his face tenderly, asking his family, how bad do I look? And honestly, I couldn't tell that anything had happened to him, but, you know, like, whatever.
He had, like, a little gash on his nose.
Oh, okay.
Like, it was a pretty little cut. Like, it looked like he drew it on with eyeliner.
And I think that Kai stealing those stinking bracelets may have been the singular best thing that has happened to Mark, perhaps ever. Because Olivia, the silkiest daughter in the whole world, says, Dad, you look really tough. Okay. And Quinn seconds this, both looking at their dad with admiration. And Nicole looks at him softly and holds his hand. And it's possible that Mark is going to get to eat a bowl of worms for dessert tonight. And if you didn't listen to the last episode or the episode before that, it's sex. That's how he compared having sex to his wife, is eating a bowl of worms. Mark looks at Nicole in surprise, but her gaze remains strong. She's back in their relationship, and suddenly, everything's coming up roses for Mark. Meanwhile, Paula sits at the table, her face riddled with guilt, and Olivia looks over at her, and she knows. And Paula looks at Olivia, and she knows she knows. And now, I'm stuck on, oh shit, what the fuck is happening, island, wondering, what the fuck is going to happen? Because this episode, the shit does not hit the fan. The shit is just kind of like, let's just...
Sitting next to the fan going...
Yeah.
You're getting sprayed a little bit, but then you've got like a few clear minutes, and then you're getting sprayed again.
It's just, yeah, this episode is, it's anticlimactic, because last episode, I thought there was a lot of stuff that was poised to go off. And this episode, we're just poising a few more things to go off.
I'm just like, what is going through Paula's head? You basically ruined somebody you really cared about's life.
Yeah, yeah.
But let's get back to what's really important here. Greg.
Yes.
Greg is what's important, just ask Tanya. Tanya and Greg are back in her room sitting on a couch as he paws at her.
Hot.
It's not.
That's so
finally,
hot.
She's had enough and pulls away. She's decided to show him the core of her onion. She's decided to show him the core of her onion and declares, Greg, you need to go. I'm a very needy person and deeply insecure, and I know you're just going to leave. Both of my parents mentally abused me, and my mother still tortures me, and she's dead. I carry her around with me. Tanya ducks into her bedroom and grabs the metal box her mother's ashes are in. She brings them back and thrusts them into Greg's hand. Here's the core of my onion. Take the ashes. He looks at her appalled. I'm not taking your mom's ashes. What do you want me to do with them? She responds tearfully. Throw them away. Put them in the car. I don't care. Just take them away. Greg responds, you're fucking crazy. Tanya says, it's who I am. There's nothing I can do about it. Get the fuck out, Greg, and save yourself. I'm a deep pit. I'm an emotional dead end. And Greg, in the most cowboy way possible, states, no, I still want to fuck you. Hello, toxic masculinity, my old friend. You've been ignoring me all day, but after I break you down, you want to stick around so you could fuck me. Great. But Tanya accepts the breadcrumb, and they return to wrestling around in a sexy way on the couch.
Hot.
Or at least lukewarm.
I love it when Tanya's like, it's who I am.
Oh my God, she took her crazy freak flag and let it fly.
She did. And he's like, yeah, I still want to fuck. We haven't fucked yet. So
yeah,
I just need to ride this crazy out so I can get it. And then I'll quit it again. Nothing hotter than a guy that you're interested in just calling you up for a booty call when you want more. As she obviously does. Oof. And like I said, he's got the lover skills of Shane. So, Every time, like, I see them being physical together, I'm like, as he just paws at her while Tanya lies there, I'm just like, yeah, not hot. Not hot.
This is like anti-porn. This is turning me off. It's supposed to be a sex scene, and I just really want it to stop.
It's really birth control. It helps you to be chaste.
Exactly. Hey, kids. Are you toying around with the idea of having sex? Well, first, let me put on this instructional video for you.
Having sex with Nicole is like eating a bowl of worms. Here, let me paw at you. Oh, yeah, that's super
you
sexy.
You think sex is going to be bliss and hot and romantic? This is probably what you're going to look forward to. See? Uh-huh. Look at it. Look at it. Don't turn away. Don't you dare turn away.
So, speaking of sex, you know, who else is potentially doing the bed dance?
Shane and his mom.
I wouldn't be surprised if Shane, like, just sneaks out. He's like, boing, 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 boing. Because when Shane's mom, Kitty, arrives, she's just like, I'll be leaving tomorrow. And then the next day she's like, don't worry, I'll be leaving tomorrow. And I'm like, great, Kitty. Great.
It's like that sign that they sometimes have in bars that's super clever that says, all beer, 25 cents tomorrow. But tomorrow never comes.
Ah, funny. That's so clever.
And that's what Shane's mom's doing. I'll leave tomorrow, but tomorrow never comes.
She's like, have a great time in Thailand on your honeymoon. Oh, I managed to get a first class seat right next to you.
Mm-hmm. We're all staying in the pineapple suite over there.
Sweet. So who else is potentially doing the bed dance? Oh, looks like Mark is eating that bowl of worms to make sweet monkey love with Nicole. Bow, chicka, bow, bow. I love some good trauma bonding. Who is not doing the bed dance? Well, as Shane sits and reads the book Blink by Malcolm Gladwell in bed, Rachel takes off her rings and tosses them onto the bedstand, declaring with her back to Shane, I think I made a mistake. And he absentmindedly says, huh? While she walks off, is it to the bathroom to get ready for bed, or is it to the closet to get ready to leave? We do not know, but regardless, at least they have their plunge pool. Priorities, am I right?
Carmen has her priorities up there. But what about the plunge pool?
Yeah.
What, can we talk about the plunge pool?
I still would not stay at the Resort of Lies, but plunge pool, yes, please.
This next section is called Paula Has Regrets and Armand is Bitter. Also, not getting a night of sweet loving. Kai and Paula. Paula's laying down on the pullout couch with her back to Olivia, and as Olivia gets ready to climb into bed, she states, it's too bad about your grandma's locket. Got stolen just an hour after you put it into the hotel safe. What are the chances? Paula says nothing but lies there with tears rolling down her face, silently crying. Outside in the dining area, Belinda and Armand are sitting at a table with their respective drinks, and I hope that Belinda got a really expensive bottle of wine to charge to Tanya's room. Armand, who is stick a fork in him done, confesses to Belinda with a whiskey in his hand. Mm-hmm. And before, if you don't recall, Belinda was chastising him for falling off the wagon and trying to be a good friend and tell him, like, get rid of the pills, get rid of this, get. And now he's full on drinking in front of her, and she does not look like she gives a fuck. She's drinking with him.
Yeah.
Armand tells her, sometimes seeing our guests eat makes me want to gouge my eyes out. The lotus eaters. Hateful is the dark blue sky, vaulted o'er the dark blue sea. Death is the end of life. Ah, why should life or labor be? The lotus eaters in Homer's Odyssey took in the shipwrecked sailors and fed them fruit that made them forget about everything and distract them from their life's purpose. Belinda does a slight nod of assent, but who really knows what's going through her mind? The end.
Oh my God. And I kind of think the Lotus Eaters is like in Odyssey is a whole metaphor for like being on opium or something like that, you know. But
it was a cute play on words, though, because he's like seeing these guests eat at the White Lotus. It makes me want to gouge my eyes out. And they're Lotus Eaters. The guests are the Lotus Eaters.
Yeah. Yeah. I was kind of trying to figure out how they were the Lotus Eaters. I understood, though, this title more than I understood the recentering one. I didn't get the whole recentering thing. They do say recentering once in the previous episode, but I was just like, nah, I don't know where that all goes.
To throw you off. Yeah. Oh, you think it's going to be like calm and serene and recentering? No.
No.
The shit is going down. The shit is going down.
Down, down, down. Yes. But yeah, I was just like, and who are these Lotus Eaters? Is it the patrons or is it the staff?
Is it the staff or is it the guests?
Yeah. Or little column A and little column B.
Yeah, exactly. I think it depends on who you ask.
Ooh. Okay, so I know that there weren't really any bad decision dinosaurs in this episode, but Tam, if you had to think off the top of your head, who might win the golden giant bad decision dinosaur? Just you know, like trying to figure that one out. Who might you think it would be?
I think my vote is going to have to go for Kai, who totally fucking ruined his life, is going to be caught and convicted of a felony because it is in excess of $1,000, specifically $75,000. And knowing that the Mossbachers are rich and will probably procure a great lawyer, he's going to be going away for a really long time.
Or we could kind of flip it around and say fucking, I mean, it is true, Kai made that decision, but you know who served him up a big plate of lotuses or whatever the shit? Paula. Paula, bad decision, dinosaur, triumphant.
Right. But Kai is his own person.
Yes.
Like, honestly, I don't want to be like not thinking you're very smart, Kai, but where are you going to pawn off a $75,000 very specific, very distinct bracelet,
yeah,
and not think anyone's gonna notice or be able to track it back towards you? Do yeah. you have ties to the black market by chance?
No, I was definitely thinking about that particular angle as well. I think that for me, the reason why I stated Paula, which I completely agree with you on Kai, and also the, hi, what are you going to do with the bracelet once you have it question. But the reason why I stated Paula was just because sometimes when you are just like with Tanya and Greg, where Greg is kind of exploiting the situation, Paula sort of wants revenge on the Mossbachers. How is she going to get revenge on the Mossbachers? Well, there's this guy that I have a crush on. No, not that I have a crush on, that has a crush on me. And I'm kind of going to use that as a way to leverage revenge against this family who's kind of driving me crazy.
Yeah.
Including their daughter, who's just like royally pissed me off now. Who's supposed to be my bestie. Better than the restie. She is not, by the way. Yeah. So,
steal your own bracelets, Paula. Steal your own bracelets.
Exactly. She could have done like some kind of steely bracelets and given them to Kai or something like that. But she wasn't going to do that. She just wanted to leverage the situation so she could have her hands clean and she could get revenge on the Mossbachers. And she was using the fact that he was super duper into her as a tool, you know, and he was kind of blinded by love and her convincing him.
Okay, well then, counter that point. He allowed himself to be used. He was her pawn and he became the pawn because she very well could walk away with her hands clean. So I still think Kai. I'm going to argue Kai. You can argue Paula. You'll be team Paula. I'll be team Kai as the bad decision dinosaur winner of this episode.
I don't think that it's fair to say that Kai put himself in the position to be used or whatever, but I absolutely agree that Kai is his own person and he makes his own decisions. And he should have been like pointing at Paula saying, bad decision, dinosaur, away, away.
And then all the things that he could have done potentially when he got caught that might have not caused him, you know, to get caught. Like he could have hid. He could have gone outside the patio. I'm sure that door, that big, beautiful window leads to a patio. He could have not left work that day. Like, you know, there's like so many other things that he could have done to potentially help himself out of that situation. But yeah, nope.
Well, Kai is obviously not a criminal mastermind, so.
No, he is not.
Any other bad decision dinosaurs in?
I think everybody is still sitting in the bad decisions that we discussed last episode.
I agree. And I agree with now having Greg prove himself to be a using asshole and having Tanya prove herself to be full of empty promises towards Belinda.
Yeah.
The one person who gets a good decision gnome is Quinn.
Rachel.
Oh,
Rachel said, I made a bet, I made a mistake, and she got up to leave. Like, I feel like she's on her way out of this relationship.
You know, I think ultimately she's on her way out of the relationship, but I don't think she's quite left yet. And also, and she has stuck around through the entirety of Kitty being there. She did not just say, y'all, I'm going off and doing my own thing. You two enjoy your love fest with each other. Bye. I'm going to go on another cremation cruise. Thank you.
Cremation cruise. Woo, we're going to sell those, the romantic, sexual cremation cruises.
Mm-hmm.
Is that blasphemous? Yes, yes, it is. But
it works. It works on so many levels.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah, so she's still sucking up to Kitty.
Yes. Yep. Kitty, I thought, well, never mind. So why do you think Quinn gets a good decision gnome?
Because he's like, he's doing the whole outrigger canoe thing with the Hawaiian guys.
Yeah, he's definitely finding his bliss.
Yeah, he's finding his bliss.
Outside of his family.
Exactly. He has taken a road less traveled. He is like, you know what? Things are shitty in this hotel room with my family. I'm going to be out on the fucking beach. It's beautiful. I can watch dolphins wank while I wank. Like, how could things not be more synchronous than that?
Yep, I agree. He gets a good decision gnome, too.
But I do agree that Rachel is moving further away from bad decision dinosaur, further into good decision gnome territory. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have anything else you'd like to say?
I do not. Everybody sits solely in their bad decision dinosaur slots from last week, and that's fine. Let's see how the needle moves next week. Because this was indeed, as Corinne said, not a lot happened. There was one major event where you're like, holy fuck. And the rest of it's like, we're just kind of milling about in the fish tank, like bumping into each other and going about our day and then bumping into each other again. But nothing really happened.
Yeah. So what episode do we have coming up next week in what I am hoping is a more eventful than the Life In episode of episode 5?
It's the final countdown. Because it's episode 6, Departures.
Ooh.
The 6th and final episode of The White Lotus Season 1.
Da, 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 da. And if you have anything you'd like to say about the life in of episode 5, the Lotus Eaters, you have profound things to say about the titles of Recentering or the Lotus Eaters in regards to the episodes that they respective episodes that they were with and what that means. Love to hear that. Please do explain to the denseness that is Corinne, me, or anything else. You can reach out to us via email at onedrykiss@gmail.com or on Insta or Facebook, all at One Dry Kiss.
And that's one spelled O-N-E. And as always, if you could find the time to rate and review us anywhere you listen to this podcast, we'd greatly appreciate it. But in the meantime, we'd like to thank you for stopping by, and we bid you adieu with one dry kiss.
Mwah. See you next time.
See you next time. Ha ha ha.